You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frostbrewed Coors Light, made to chill. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore. Joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, an old friend and one of the great writers out there, covers the sport of football, National Football League, for New York Newsday. He is Bob Glauber. Hello, Bob.
Robert, how are you, my friend?
I am doing great. Say hello to Dave Wyman, who you may know. He played in the league for 9 years, and then our very own writer, Jim Moore. So I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to these guys before, but your first introduction, perhaps.
Well, hi, Bob. Great to meet you. Hey, how you doing, guys? I recognize that name, of course, and that's pretty cool. Stelton, you're hooked up with famous people, man. It continues.
Yeah, they're just carrying me. I just set them up to look good, and we make it happen that way. Bob, by the way, I hope everybody in your neck of the woods, we're all doing our shows from our home, so there's a little bit of a delay. So forgive us for that, but hopefully everybody on your end out there is safe and you're protected well out there. I hope.
Yes. Things are going okay. Couple of glitches here and there, but you know we're doing okay. So it's a very scary time for everybody. And you know, I think you kind of hit that first wave out on the West Coast in Seattle before we did. And you know, New York and New Jersey is just getting whacked, and it's a really frightening, disturbing time. Something we've never lived through. And I was talking to my mom the other day. She's actually in a nursing home. We can't visit her now, and she's 89 years old. And I said, Mom, we've never seen this before in my life, not in my lifetime. She goes, not in my lifetime either. So it's tough times.
Well, let's talk just on the heels of that. We were playing some sound earlier from Adam Schefter, who seems to be making it clear he's very against the draft being held. You know, Roger Goodell has held firm. No, we're gonna continue with it on the date it was scheduled, despite the protests of some. I as a sports fan am looking for diversions. I mean, we're watching old games being broadcast on ESPN and Fox and wherever, and I think people are just looking for diversions out there. And I think this goes a long way. I think they're taking all precautions necessary. We'll see what it looks like when it is broadcast. But do you have any issues with Roger Goodell's stance on sticking firm to the date of the draft?
No, I'm okay with it. And, you know, let's face it, Schefter is just a hack. I mean, come on. I'm kidding. Kidding. So, no, he feels very strongly about that. And, you know, Adam and myself, you know, we've got a connection in New York to 9/11. And there is a 9/11 feel to this situation. It's obviously more nationwide, but it's messed up, man, and it's traumatic. But I do think, and I agree with you, that this is a diversion. And I was a little bit concerned about the opening of free agency. It was March 17th, March 18th, and it was like, wow, you know, do you really want to do that? It's, you know, it's getting bad. And you know, I could see if they had pushed it off, I would have said, hey, listen, get it, no problem, and, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, as it unfolded, I mean, it really did give people a chance to think about something else. And, you know, nobody was put in harm's way. Same with the draft. No one's asking anybody to do anything dangerous or life-risking. You know, it's a virtual experience, and people are looking forward to it. So I think the same thing, you know, as free agency now with the draft. I think there is some kind of therapeutic dimension to it, because it just does feel better to think about something else, to talk about something else. And it's not like, you know, it's not like the world has shut down. I like that show in the morning, and I get to watch it now working from home, Kelly and Ryan, right, on ABC, the morning show. And they're doing it from their homes, and, you know, the show goes on. So I think this is in keeping with that. I do think it's okay. And, you know, I am looking forward to the draft to just think about something else and write about something else. And, like, honestly, I've been writing as much or more this year in the off season compared to other years, because, honestly, the NFL is the only game in town right now.
Hey, Bob, first of all, best wishes to your 89-year-old mom. I know my parents are down in Tucson, 77, 78 years old, and I worry about them every day. So be thinking good thoughts for your mom. As far as the thing goes with, I'm totally with you that there needs to be diversion and anything that can take our minds off of this. It's like every morning I wake up and just go, wow, are we really going through this? It hits you every morning. Yeah. But, you know, the thing I'm kind of, one of the points that Schefter made that I think could be a problem is, what about some of these physicals? And what about some of these, like all of these free agent contracts, you know, they're not signed yet because you mm-hmm. have to have, mm-hmm. you know, a physical and everything. And, you know, that might actually hold up the draft a little bit, was his point. Do you see any, I feel like there's going to be a lot of legal things that come down the pike after this whole thing gets cleared up.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point, and I agree that there are some issues now. I was talking to an agent today for a story I'm working on for Sunday, just about, you know, the agent's role and you know how they're handling things and dealing with their players and advising their players. And the free agents who have agreed to terms but not signed contracts, they are at an incredible disadvantage. And, he was talking about, like, if you have a free agent, you've got to get that physical somehow, some way. You know, they've agreed on neutral doctors being able to give these physicals. And, you know, you have to get that done because those signing bonuses are everything and the guaranteed money is everything. And it's hard on those players because, let's say you're a linebacker who has signed, you know, who's agreed to terms with a team, and you still don't sign that contract by draft time, and that team drafts a linebacker, they can say, hey, sorry guys, you know, we went in a different direction. They are at a distinct disadvantage, and I have to believe there's got to be some means to address that, whether it's legal, whether it's an arbitration, that kind of thing remains to be seen. But there are some big problems with that. I don't know that delaying the draft would avoid that because I think the teams, you know, they are in a very good position. They have the leverage by not having to sign those players. So I hope, especially for the veteran players' sake, that they can work this out and fair's fair. You know, let guys make their money and as much as they can. And it is sticky, but again, I don't know that that's the way. You know, the way to go there is to just withhold the draft or delay the draft indefinitely because it's got to be done at some point.
Bob, we're sitting here in a holding pattern in Seattle with Jadeveon Clowney wondering whether he's going to re-sign with the Seahawks or move on, and it seems like everybody's talking about injuries, inconsistency, the lack of being able to give him a physical when you're putting out that many millions for a player like him. Where do you end up? How do you see this being resolved? What's the neighborhood of the salary, and where do you think he's going to end up?
Well, Clowney wants, obviously, you know, marquee money and on a multi-year deal, and I just don't think there is a market for him for the very reasons you mentioned. He has not been an every-down kind of guy. And look, defensive players, you can't expect them to go every play. It's just impossible, especially bigger guys. Now, you know, interior linemen get accused of that often. They're called lazy because they take plays off. No, it's just like you gotta have a rotation and you gotta give these guys a break. Now Clowney, you know, he has just not shown enough consistency throughout his career. The injuries are an issue. You know, when he's good, he can dominate a game and change a game. But you know, there just are not enough of those times when he is that good to justify the kind of money that he is looking for. So I think at the end of the day, I wouldn't be surprised if he re-signs with Seattle, but I think it's going to be on a one-year deal. Wherever he goes, it's just going to be a prove-it deal, and then hope. And a lot of guys are doing that now. Guys who missed out on that first-tier money are just going to sign one-year deals, try to have a big year, and then come back at it next year when presumably more TV money will kick in. And, you know, there's a chance to get a bigger deal for a longer period of time.
We heard his name attached to the Jets and, you know, other teams initially. Now it seems like the teams you hear are the Seahawks and the Titans. We'll see what happens. But did the Jets have a legitimate interest in him?
Yes. Yes, they did have interest. And I think they still would have interest. You know, if Clowney does sign a one-year deal and the Jets could, you know, outbid either Tennessee or Seattle in that deal, he could do it. I honestly think he's better off being with a team like Tennessee or Seattle because they're better. He's got a better chance to have a better season with better players around him. So I think it will work to his advantage if it is going to be a one-year deal. But yes, there has been legitimate interest on the Jets' part. I don't think it's there on a huge long-term deal. But you know, things change in free agency, and once the draft comes and goes, he may get his money. I just don't see it. I think he would have gotten that deal already.
Hey Bob, what have you been doing with your time now that we're all sequestered? We've been watching Ozark a little bit, but what's your favorite show? How you been passing the time when you're sitting at home?
Well, I have my wife and my daughter. My daughter is a teacher in a local school system, so she's teaching remotely. We watch movies. We watched a good movie last night. I forget the something little, but it was kind of a creepy story about a guy who killed children. But it was a very well done. It was a good movie. It was a Steven Spielberg movie, right? But it was like creepy, but very well done as a movie. You know, we haven't been binging lately. We love This Is Us. I mean, that show is just addictive. We have caught up on that one. And, you know, my daughter, the teacher, is the one who got us into Breaking Bad initially. She was probably 17 when she started watching that. And we're on vacation, and she's like keeps watching this thing on her computer. I said, Emily, what are you doing? She goes, guys, I'm going to show you this TV show. Don't be mad at me, but it's amazing. So it was an episode of Breaking Bad, and we're like, oh my God, this is incredible. So that's when the binging did start. So it's more just kind of movies and hanging out, but it is good to be together. And honestly, I work in my pajamas this time of year anyway because it's free agency, right? So this is kind of in my wheelhouse anyway. I'm surviving okay, but it is nice to be able to think you can get out and live a normal life, at least go out to a restaurant. So it's really a challenging time, there's no question. And honestly, to see the acts of heroism from everyday people, first responders and the medical community, it's incredible. And the way that we're trying to survive, that kind of supersedes any, you know, struggles with boredom or, you know, trying to get through the day. Man, this is life and death stuff, and it's pretty incredible to see how we go about trying to solve these problems as one. And sometimes we're not one, and there's problems with that. But it's a pretty incredible time to be alive. Let's just hope we can all stay safe.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things. I mean, we're all staying apart, but we're also coming together as a country. And, you know, I mean, we're sitting here and the kids, I've got 15-year-old twins, and they haven't really complained. And I think part of that is because they've got video games left and right that can entertain them. But I think part of it, too, is that they understand how serious the situation is. And, you know, the complaining might end tonight, though, Bob, because the Scrabble game arrived via Amazon today. So we're going to play Scrabble tonight. We're going to force them to sit down and play a board game, and we'll see how that goes.
Oh, great. I loved Scrabble. My grandmother introduced me to Scrabble. So now I just do words with friends, and that is like virtual Scrabble. That is addictive, man. It's basically Scrabble on your phone. So I don't know if you play it or heard of it, but check it out. Scrabble, like the board game, is kind of old school, but it's a fun game. Love Scrabble.
Bob Glauber from New York Newsday.
Oh, go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
Go ahead, Jim.
Talking about you know, the different viewing options that we have, and we were earlier in the show talking about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning joining Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson in a golf match that they might have in May. And I just wanted to ask you about Brady and how you feel he's going to do in Tampa Bay. I feel like I'm alone on an island here, Bob, because I'm looking at Tom Brady, and I know he's the greatest of all time and how many championships he's won in New England, and go on and on and on about that. And I appreciate his greatness as much as the next guy, but he's going to be 43 years old. And so I'm just not seeing it in Tampa Bay, but maybe you feel otherwise.
Well, you got any room on that island?
Sure, come on.
No, listen, I like the move. I think Tampa Bay got itself a big-time player who will absolutely improve the players around him, the team around him. I think they'll be a better team. They'll be a playoff-contending team. I don't see a Super Bowl-contending team because I think Brady, I think we've seen the best of Brady. I don't think we'll go back to that time. There are two games in particular that kind of struck me like very strongly last year. That was the last game against Miami where he couldn't pull out that win, and that really decided the playoffs because they didn't get the bye. And then that following week I was in Foxborough just watching time after time after time. Comes out in the second half with a chance to go ahead, and he can't get it done. And it was just, you know, I know that his receiving core was not up to snuff. I do know that. But he still had Julian Edelman out there. He still had James White out there. He still had a good running game, but he could not get it done. And I am like, you know what? That what you see is what you see, and you can't unsee that. So over a 16-game season with a new team, with a new coach, new system, new players around him, that's a tough ask. And he's got no off-season to work with because, let's face it, there's not going to be an off-season. I don't even know if there's going to be a regular season, honestly. But if there is, he will not have had the benefit of a real, legitimate off-season. And that guy's a creature of habit. He's a gym rat. He's got to have everything perfect, and he just won't have that opportunity. So I think there'll be some more struggles, perhaps, than others might think. So I'm kind of with you on that. But I do think there'll be a better team, and I do think they can contend for a playoff spot, just not Super Bowl contention.
He's a national football writer for New York Newsday. Bob Glauber is our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Bob, I've got the NFL Network on the TV with the sound off, and I'm just looking at the conversation that keeps coming up about Dwayne Haskins. And, you know, should the Redskins move on from him? Should they draft a quarterback with that second overall pick? Should they go after Tua instead of Chase Young? And I'm thinking, man, it's awfully early to pull the plug on a rookie who got thrown into a situation. What's your take on Washington and Haskins? Is he a guy you believe in, or do you think they could actually spend that second overall pick on somebody other than Chase Young?
Well, they did sign Kyle Allen from Carolina, and I think that's a significant signing. Ron Rivera is familiar with him, and he basically said he's gonna challenge for the starting job. He did not give it to Haskins, and I think that was significant. I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback at number two. I think they will end up with Chase Young. Hey, look, anything's possible, but signing Allen, I think, was an indication that they're going to go with a different need at that number two spot, and that would appear to be Chase Young. That said, there's a real issue with Haskins and whether he loves the game enough to just be the, you know, all-in kind of guy that you need to be at quarterback in this league. So I think that Ron Rivera kind of hedged his bets a little bit, got himself perhaps a quarterback competition in training camp, and we'll see about it. So, listen, there's no question about Haskins' talent. He has got it as far as the package of arm, can move, you know, got good vision. But he's got to take a very significant step up. I think he's got it in him, and I think the Redskins would like to believe he has it in him, but I don't think they're 100% convinced just yet. And let the thing play out. Hopefully he will blossom, because you hate to see talent like that wasted. You just want to see that flourish, and I think he's got certainly the chance to do that.
Hey, Bob, we've been talking a lot about the draft this week, and, you know, probably the worst thing that John Schneider did here in Seattle was have that 2012 draft, because now everybody expects him to pull a Bobby Wagner, Bruce Irvin, Russell Wilson, J.R. Sweet. I mean, you know, I always have viewed it as kind of a crapshoot, and really this goes from going back to when I was drafted. You know, there was Hardy Nickerson got drafted in like the sixth round. I got drafted in the second round. He was way better than me. So, you know, there's just, I feel like it always is just kind of a, you always see these first round busts, but just in general, what are your expectations? I mean, if you can get three or four guys a year, depending on the draft choices, how do you view that?
Yeah, I think three to four is good, not great. And you know, you include undrafted free agents in there because, you know, those guys can make teams. John Schneider, you know, talk about a hack. That guy might be one of my three favorite general managers in the league in terms of his ability to get talent and to get talent right in the lower and mid rounds. So, you know, maybe his past comes back to haunt him a little bit because he was so good, you know, getting that Legion of Boom together, among other things. But I you know, in football we trust, in Schneider we trust, because I think he is terrific. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out. But you know what? You got to keep swinging. And I remember he took a chance on a former Giants, DeMontre Moore. Like, I think did he trade for DeMontre Moore? He signed him as a free agent. I'm like, oh, man, if he gets anything out of this guy, good luck. And, you know, he didn't. But you know what? You just keep swinging. And Schneider is good. Schneider knows, he knows the insides of a football player. He can tell what goes on inside a guy's head. And I think, you know, that's an art. And a lot of guys don't have that, but Schneider knows the heart of a football player, and you know he finds him more often than not. So I think this team is always going to be in good shape with him, you know, leading the way on the roster.
Hey, Bob, last thing for me. How do you feel about the new NFL playoff format?
I mean, I'm okay. It's going to take some getting used to. You know, in 17-game season in 2021 is going to take some getting used to. I assume we'll have it by then because the TV money will kick in. You know, change is always a little bit difficult, but, you know, more playoff games, more playoff teams, and that's a good thing. So you get the six games on the wild card weekend. It's wall-to-wall. I think the first two weekends of the NFL playoffs are about the best there is in pro sports. It's just, it's great. And the divisional round I love because you got teams that are left are really good and there are four games. And then, you go to conference and it's two and then it's one. But, man, those first 2 weeks are tremendous. And I think that will enhance it. I think it'll give teams more of a chance, more teams more of a chance to get in that playoff hunt, especially late in the season. And I did find it interesting that had there been 14 playoff teams since 1990, one team would have had a losing record of all. One team, and that would be the 1990 Dallas Cowboys, who were 7-9. They would have made it that year. And the only other team, of course, to win, you know, to get to a playoff with a losing record was the Seahawks, I believe, in 2010. So, you know, I don't think it waters it down to the point where you're going to get Dreck into the playoffs. You know, you'll get some marginal teams, but you get marginal teams every year. So I'm in favor of it.
He is Bob Glauber from New York Newsday. Does a great job covering the NFL. Bob, really good to catch up with you. Hear your voice, my friend. I'm glad everybody's okay out there. Stay safe. Thanks so much for taking time with us, and I look forward to talking soon.
You got it, Bob, and I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for having me. Call anytime. Really, really enjoyed it. And good, you know, you guys stay safe as well, because I know we're dealing with the same thing.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bob. Take care, buddy. There you go. There's Bob Glauber, one of the great guys in the sport. Does a great job covering the NFL for New York Newsday. So appreciate him taking time. Coming up, I've got a hill I'm going to die on. So that means it's time for another edition of Change My Mind. You guys can text in to 710-710. Tell me I'm wrong on this one. We're going to get into it next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the way it is. Go ahead. Change my mind.
We'll see if you guys can change my mind, either Dave, Jim, or the listeners. You can text into 710-710. That's our text number. You know, I was doing some research last night, and we spent so much time, for good reason, talking about Jadeveon Clowney, because pass rush was the biggest concern going into the offseason. It was bad last year. We could talk about the reasons why and who needs to step up and all that, and who needs to be added, all that good stuff. They've addressed it to a point. They signed Benson Mayowa today, in case you guys missed that news. They brought back Bruce Irvin. So you got two former Seahawks they brought back. No word on Jadeveon Clowney yet. So they're addressing it. They've addressed the offensive line. That's another concern. They brought in, you know, four different guys. We'll see who pans out, who doesn't. The running back position to me is far and away the most concerning position next to the pass rush. And for these reasons, and it's not because I don't think they don't have talent there. I think Chris Carson is immensely talented. I love the way he runs. I love his attitude. But we talk over and over about the shelf life of an NFL player, and it's even shorter for a running back. We talk about an average of just over 3 years. And Chris Carson, he's played three seasons. He's missed a total of 15 games in those three seasons, and that doesn't include playoffs. So you look at it and say, all right, he's is that bad luck? Is that a result of his running style? Is he going to become more durable as the years go on? Rashad Penny, he's missed 8 games in 2 seasons, not including playoffs. Same question. Bad luck? Is he fragile? Is it his running style? CJ Procise is gone, in my opinion. He was healthy last year when they needed running backs, and he was still a healthy scratch. They bring in Marshawn Lynch out of the tailgate parking lot to help him out. So that tells me they don't believe in Procise. So to me, you've got two question marks in Carson and Penny, and you've got a nice young guy in Homer who I like, but he doesn't look like an every down back to me. To me, running back is the spot they need to address. Whether we're talking about a veteran, whether we're talking about a rookie, they have to address that spot. I don't feel nearly as secure about the running back position as I do the other position groups on the team.
Yeah, you know, I'm probably not going to be able to change your mind, Bob. I'm kind of with you on this, and I think that's kind of the approach that you have to have, is that you have to have a stable of guys. And I think we're a little bit shell-shocked because of what happened last year with, you know, all three running backs going down, you know, especially at the end of the season. But as Jim knows, he's heard me talk about, I think it's the running back much more than it is, you know, offensive line whenever it comes to talking about the run game. And the other thing is, and here's something that it was kind of surprising to me. I guess I went in thinking, you know, you can get guys late in the draft like Chris Carson, or, you know, right, you can get a kid like, who's the guy? Philip Lindsay, who was a free agent that the Broncos Denver just hit a home run on. Man, yeah. And so free agent, undrafted. But, you know, you look at a lot of these, you know, some of these draft choices, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, Gurley. I mean, all of these guys are pretty much high draft choices, you know, first round type of deal. And then you look at, like, Alvin Kamara. He was, I think, the first pick of the third round. So, you know, I went in thinking, yeah, you can get guys in free agency, you can get guys later on in the draft, but a lot of the really good, really productive backs are taken, you know, in the first round. So, yeah, I think it's really important. They want to run the ball on offense, and everybody talks about getting, you know, Russell Wilson these weapons and everything, and I'm all for that, but the run game is the priority, really. That's what makes this offense go. And so, yeah, I would say, yeah, you want to get, and again, you need a stable of running backs, because they get hurt, and running backs just get pounded, and that's the reason why you look around, you look at the average you mentioned, Bob, and then why they don't get paid. Nobody wants to pay running backs because of the injury concerns.
And Jim, I don't know where you're at on Penny, but a lot of people were fired up about, you know, hey, he looked like he was coming on, and I went back and looked at his numbers. He's played 24 regular season games. He's only rushed for 100 yards twice in 2 years, and he's got a total of 3 games of over 70 yards. So I don't quite see what everybody else sees. It doesn't mean he won't become something. I'm not saying, oh, let's get rid of him, he's a bust. I'm just saying I've seen very little in the way of production to say, okay, I can count on what he's going to be when he becomes healthy.
Well, okay, I can see why you'd think that, but Bob, toward the end there with Rashad Penny, before he got hurt, he was starting to finally look like a first-round draft pick. And that was the thing about him. You thought, well, I wonder what Schneider saw in him. And then you saw the numbers at San Diego State, but you wondered about the competition there at the college level. And so I was really encouraged. I thought, okay, Penny, his last few games to me look like the guy that Schneider saw at San Diego State and the reason they took him in the first round. But the problem now is with this injury, Pete Carroll, whenever he sounds a little pessimistic, that's when you really need to be concerned. This is a pretty major injury that Penny suffered to his knee. I mean, there's considerable damage there. It looks like he's going to start the year on the PUP list and may not be ready to go until October. It looks like it might be another one of those years for Penny where we don't see him get back to full strength until 2021. I mean, I'm just guessing here and speculating. Chris Carson, I think he's going to be good to go, but now you're in the last year of his contract. He's probably going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So I'm with you. I can't really change your mind. My feeling is that they need to bring in a veteran running back, and I don't want to see Marshawn Lynch or Robert Turbin again. I'm talking about guys like Devontae Freeman and Carlos Hyde. Get a guy in here who's a veteran, who's done it in the league. You're going to have an abbreviated training camp, perhaps. You're not going to have OTAs. It's going to be even more difficult for a rookie to come in here and make an immediate impact. We saw Travis Homer last year as a rookie, and he was good. He wasn't great, but he filled in okay. But to expect a rookie running back to come in and be your number two guy, especially if you lose ProSize, which we expect, I think that they need to explore that in free agency, and maybe they're just holding off until they get the whole Clowney situation resolved.
Well, Brock Heward was on with Danny and Gallant, cut number two, and he talked about a rookie running back that he'd like to see the Seahawks go after if he falls to the second round.
But Jonathan Taylor, the running back at Wisconsin, is a guy that if he were there in the late second round with the Seahawks' second round pick, somehow he fell that far, right? That all these other positions and receivers and linemen and pass rushers and quarterbacks and all these kind of guys went, linebackers. And all of a sudden, because there's great depth at the running back position, that dude is there in the mid to late second round. He is...
Jonathan Taylor, tailback!
He is a home run hitter. I mean, he is 230 pounds running 4.3 and scoring touchdowns. He's breaking a tackle, and everybody loves C.J. ProSize's one unbelievable play where he broke a tackle and he took it 75 yards. That's Jonathan Taylor. Not that he's going to do that in the NFL time after time after time, but when you've got his kind of juice and his explosion and his strength, and that dude is just an absolute baller.
Dave, we're up against the break, but would you spend a second-round pick on him if he's there?
Yeah, it's that much of a priority. And I have to say that when it comes to colleges with good programs, Wisconsin, I just always give anybody from Wisconsin a little bit of an edge. Same with LSU. But, yeah, it's a priority on this team. We all know this, that Pete wants to run the ball. So why wouldn't you? Yeah, I would say if he's there, definitely that would be exciting.
All right, coming up, we just mentioned that the Seahawks made a move today to address their pass rush. So what does it mean to Jadeveon Clowney's future here? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. It is very convenient these days. It's free. Just download it. You don't need to be in front of a radio the way you otherwise would be. Also, remember, you now have radios in your homes. You got smart speakers, if perhaps, and you can just tell them play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. So you can take us with you. We can all be quarantined together. But before we move on to what the Seahawks have done with the defensive line, the acquisition, Dave, you wanted to weigh in on the running back conversation we had in the last segment?
Yeah, just another thing to support, you know, what you were saying, that how important the run game was. If they had Chris Carson, I think they win that game in Green Bay. Now, we'll see if, you know, if they're able to go on and beat the Niners. But, I mean, what they were dealing with in the run game, we all know about, you know, Turbin and Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer, the rookie, but in the Philadelphia game, they ran for 110 yards. Russell was 46 of those yards. So, you know, and then if you go to the Green Bay game, Actually, they ran for 64 yards. Russell was 45 of those yards running. So the running backs during the playoffs got 46 yards against Philadelphia and 19 yards against Green Bay. So Yikes. That's how important that run game is. Yeah, and so they were averaging 137.5. I think they were number four in the NFL. Yeah, they were last year. On average, they averaged 87 yards a game on the ground in those two playoff games. So, and to me, again, if you have Chris Carson healthy the way he was running, I think he's, you know, I know Christian McCaffrey is a great running back, but I love his style. It's what Pete wants, and it's very important to have big physical backs, and that's what they want. They want a punishing run game. So, yeah, I'm with you on the running back thing, man.
Are you reluctant at all, and maybe Jim could weigh in on this quickly before we talk about Benson Mayoa, are you reluctant at all to pay Carson? This is the final year of his deal. Hopefully he plays all 16 and into the playoffs. We assume they make the playoffs, but would you be reluctant based on his injury history to commit big dollars to him?
Well, I would be, Bob. I mean, when you look at the way he ended the season, and I love, just like Dave and just like you, Bob, I mean, and I think most Seahawks fans, you love his running style. You love what Chris Carson has turned into. I mean, he's such a violent runner. But I think even if he had finished the season healthy, that they weren't going to offer him an extension. They were just going to let him play it out. Joel Corey from CBS Sports, he always talks, former agent, talks about not wanting to pay running backs. You can make a case for extending Chris Carson under the best of circumstances, but certainly not now.
It pains me to say I agree. Yeah,
really?
I wouldn't extend him either. Yeah, I mean, I love Chris Carson. I just love everything about his style, but you just can't do that with running backs. I mean, it's obviously a function of what you want to spend on him, but, you know, maybe they can get him for a bargain, but I don't think anybody's going to spend that much money on him, and it just, unfortunately for running backs, it seems to be one of those sort of, you know, it's a position where, you know, you just have to have a lot of guys. You have to have a stable, like I said, and there's going to be lots of injuries.
Well, let's talk about somebody they did commit a little bit of money to, and that's another former Seahawk, Benson Mayoa, who agreed to a deal that will give him just over $3 million for a one-year deal. They brought in Bruce Irvin, another former Seahawk. We have not seen the numbers on Bruce Irvin, so I'm not sure what his chunk of the salary cap is going to be. But, Dave, in your opinion, does this signal, as you've said, the train has left the station with Clowney? Do you think they're still thinking we can fit him in with these other moves we've made? Or how do you see the move today impacting Clowney?
Well, I think that might be an indication that they're not able to get him. I think that the Seahawks are going to be really strong on the offer that they have, and it's a take-it-or-leave-it type of deal. And so now would you have Mayoa, and maybe you can get, you know, you go put him along with Bruce Irvin, and then, you know, maybe you can get something done with Everson Griffin. But, yeah, just to me, it just seems like, you know, it's much more unlikely that they sign Clowney. The other thing I wanted to point out about Mayoa, he had limited reps. He played in 15 games. He didn't start, and he got production, three forced fumbles. So, you know, if you can, about half the time you get a sack, you can force a fumble. And I'm not sure if those were on those sacks, but, you know, three forced fumbles for him last year, seven sacks, and, you know, for the limited amount of reps that he had, yeah, that's pretty good production. So, I mean, if you can kind of go and get two or three guys like that, which I think is what they're in the process of doing, then, you know, the Clowney price tag, I just think he's going to be terribly disappointed and not going to be able to get, you know, the money that he wants. And I don't think the Seahawks are going to pay it to him now.
Well, I was looking at overthecap.com yesterday when I was doing some research, if you want to call it that, for the story that I wrote about Clowney's potential landing spots if they're not in Seattle. And the Seahawks had only $11.3 million under the cap to work with yesterday. Now, if you add Mayoa to that with his $3 million base salary, now you're talking under $10 million. And it's a situation, too, where we're hearing reports about Clowney only getting a one-year deal, a prove-it type deal. Well, you can't really spread that money out if it's just a one-year deal. So then you're talking about cutting Justin Britt, maybe Bradley McDougal, trying to free up some more space. So I'm kind of with you on that. I think they're, even though it's a low-budget deal, bringing in Benson Mayoa, it might be just enough that it's going to make Clowney look elsewhere because the Seahawks won't be able to afford him, especially if it's a one-year deal.
Jim, I like that when you talk about Clowney, and I think you wrote about it, that when you talk about him here, you talk, well, he didn't have the sacks, and I didn't see what everybody else saw, but then you talk about, well, imagine him in Cleveland with Myles Garrett, and what are you, that kind of disruption, and all of a sudden he's this force in Cleveland. Imagine what that could be. Why is he different in Cleveland versus here?
Well, who's the version of Myles Garrett in Seattle?
Is it strictly because of Myles Garrett, or do you just think Clowney is a better player in Cleveland than he is here?
No, I'm just thinking, you know, that everybody talks about, well, he'd be a better player if he had a supporting player around him, and last year he didn't really have that in Seattle, so I'm just assuming, you know, people that talk about, well, he had J.J. Watt in Houston, well, if he had Myles Garrett in Cleveland, maybe he'd be a better player, but maybe Jaron Reed will be that guy when he has a full training camp this year, and he'll go back to that 10.5 sack season that we saw him have in 2018.
Or maybe Bruce Irvin or the combo of Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayowa, along with guys stepping up. Maybe L.J. Collier does step up a little. Maybe Rasheem Green takes the next step. So maybe you get a few guys chipping in along the way, and Clowney becomes the player that you think he'd be in Cleveland.
Well, I don't think I sufficiently answered your question, Bob. That's the feeling I'm getting.
It's just I'm just trying to see where Jim's head's at. That's all. We'll talk some more.
Well, Jim
football.
Doesn't even know where his head's at. Come on.
Oh, I know where it
some
is.
Some people may have a guess. I knew that was coming. Some people have a guess where Jim's head's at. We'll come
heading,
back. We'll
heading
talk
toward
more
a cocktail here pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to talk. We'll get you there, Jim. We'll get you there. Let's talk some more football. The Professor John Clayton will join us next. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
You know, there is so much learning happening on this show every day. It really is a public service. From Bob, Dave, and Moore to our listeners out there, the knowledge that's being shared each and every day. Right, Brian?
That is correct, and today is no different.
What did we learn today?
Well, we learned that sometimes the truth hurts, especially for Jim.
Gardner would be an excellent backup. I don't think you're going into the season with Gardner Minshew saying we're going to make the playoffs or be a consistent playoff caliber team for years to come. He's the perfect guy for what he kind of did last year. If you're struggling and your starter gets hurt, go play a couple games, create some magic, and then go sit back down. You know, kind of a, talking about magic, maybe a young Fitzmagic, like a young Ryan Fitzpatrick type of player. I think his career will kind of end up as opposed to a frontline starter who you're going into each season thinking you're going to compete in the playoffs.
Well, that's Mark, not really what I wanted to hear from you, Mark.
That was Mark the Truth Teller Ross from the NFL Network.
He was the truth teller talking about Clowney's inconsistency, but when it came to Gardner Minshew, he didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah. Did you notice that, Dave? There was a lot of praise coming from Jim when he was a little critical of Clowney. He was like, "Man, I'm so glad to hear you say that." And then he talks about Gardner Minshew saying, "Yeah, I don't think anybody's looking at him as a starter. He's good off the bench. He's a younger Ryan Fitzpatrick." All of a sudden, he's like, what does this guy know?"
You know, Bob, I'm so used to that. I didn't even notice. I didn't even notice it. I'm so used to it.
I just hear what I want to hear.
Yeah, he's in and out.
Very
Bob.
Clear. Oh, I love it. Mark was very good, by the way. We enjoyed
he
that,
was.
Despite what Jim great. Feels about his last statement there. what else did we learn, Brian?
Well, we learned that these high-scoring NFL games, like the Rams and the Chiefs, that's just a little peek into Dave's nightmare.
I thought that game was awesome. Because you never see that. It doesn't happen. That's why it was such a talking point. That's why it was such big news, because you just don't see a game like that in the NFL. I mean, you had 10 touchdown passes between Mahomes and Jared Goff in that game. And I know defensively, as a defensive guy, Dave, you probably didn't love it. But, man, that game was so wildly entertaining. I loved it, and I loved watching it again.
It was awful, Bob. It was
absolutely an abomination.
Dave, there was not even just for that isolated game. You knew that was not how the NFL was going to go moving forward, despite everybody's panic and saying, "Oh no, this represents what we're going to watch every week." You knew that was an aberration, and that's what made it fun to me. You didn't enjoy it at all.
Well, I just the reaction to it. Every once in a while, we get a game like this, and then everybody's like, "Oh, the NFL's changing. It's going to be like this." No, it's not, because fast forward to the Super Bowl and the Rams, who scored 54 points in that game. They only scored 3 in the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
13-3.
But yeah, that was a barn burner. But I like those kinds of games. I love watching the defense. But yeah, I guess there's a side of me that I used to play tight end in high school. So maybe I can see a little bit of the joy on the offensive side of the ball.
Did you like that game at all,
Boy,
Jim?
It sure seemed... Well, I did like it, but yeah, there was a part of me that was thinking it was almost too much of a track meet, like it was a Pac-12 game or something. But it sure seemed like a change for the Rams. You remember that Sunday night game in Chicago where someone finally figured out the Rams, and they weren't the same after that.
Right.
Hmm. Well,
yeah, you're right. I mean, that. Yeah, they kind of solved the puzzle there in Chicago, and then teams, although the Seahawks have not been able to do that, I would say, against the Rams, unfortunately. But, yeah, there was a couple of teams that kind of figured them out, and that always happens.
Yeah, that puzzle remains a puzzle for the Seahawks when they face the Rams, regardless of whether they have Goff or Gurley or anybody else. Rams always seem to give them trouble.
Yeah. Or if they're in L.A. or St. Louis.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's that.
Yeah, Jeff Fisher always seemed to figure him out.
Yeah, he had him fooled on special teams. He was. They're always a problem. Always a problem. Did we learn anything else, Brian?
Nope, that's it for today.
All right, there you go. Good stuff today. Good show. Mark Ross, John Clayton, Rasheem Green, Bob Glauber all joined us on the program. So if you missed any of it, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast button and click on our picture. And everything you missed is waiting for you there each and every day. We appreciate everybody hanging with us during this time. Hopefully we're providing a diversion for you. So let's meet here again tomorrow with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
What are you eating?